And welcome to our Wednesday Twilight Show. I'm your host, Michelle, and joining me tonight is a passionate and exceptional leader and educator, Mr. Chris Simmons. Together, we will discuss the impact of leadership on staff motivation and pupil outcomes. Do join the discussion.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the Wednesday Twilight Show. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I'd like to take a minute just to say thanks to Paul, who reviewed my last show. I've listened to it repeatedly. I was really honored to have been featured in the review. Thank you, Paul, and I'm really happy that I took you back to the days of pirate radio, as you said, and the intimacy between listeners and radio hosts. I do hope I'll be able to continue to inspire others each fortnight. I also want to thank those who've been listening to the podcast, who've shared their own opinions. Thank you so much, and let's keep the discussion going. So our guest tonight will be with us for the first half of the show, so I want to get straight into it and get as much as possible out of him. So let me just take this opportunity to welcome our guest, Mr. Chris Simmons, an experienced senior leader. Throughout his career, he has effectively coached and mentored staff and at various stages of their careers to excel in the humanities department and in the school as a whole. He's not just vice principal of one school, but he's vice principal across two schools and has been instrumental in leading on areas such as data and teaching and learning. He's very passionate about education, but he also has other passions. He's a GB powerlifter, so we've got a strong man in our presence, 5 times powerlifting champion and 16 times British powerlifting records. He's a proud dad and doting husband. Chris, welcome to TT Radio and thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Nice to speak to you.
It's great to hear your voice again, and I know you've got such a busy schedule and I appreciate the time you're taking to be with us. We want to welcome our guests who are already online, Charlie and both Toms, welcome. So remember to call in or send us a message if you're listening by downloading the Podbean app. And let's talk about it. How would you define your style of leadership and how effective has it been? So please tune in and let's hear from you. So I'm going to give a quick overview. There are several leadership styles. You know, we've got transactional, we've got transformational, servant style leadership, autocratic, you name it. There are so many. And hopefully tonight we'll get to really focus on some of those and how they apply to us in education. And if you're listening from the corporate world, how does it apply to you? So I stumbled upon John Gibbs's Friday night show on authoritative school leadership and was really inspired to look at leadership from another angle. And his show outlined the problems with authoritative leadership and the need for students to be almost robotic. You know, he mentioned some examples, hands up, hands down, lean forward, heads up, chant, line up, etc. And so schools create these things and put these things in place for a reason. But the question is, do these stringent measures influence staff motivation and subsequently student outcomes? Academically, they might succeed, but how are they developing holistically? Do they later copy their school style of leadership when they themselves become leaders? And research has found that students tend to do that. So tonight with my guest, as I said, who's a very experienced leader, we'll unpick those. What makes an effective leader? What are those key components? How do we measure or validate true leadership? So Chris, we are going straight into our discussion. So welcome once again.
Indeed.
And my first question is, tell us a little bit about your journey to senior leadership.
So I started teaching 14 years ago. I, in my sort of first full year as a teacher became a lead teacher, and then an AST, as they were back then, an advanced skills teacher. I then went to a different school, became a head of humanities, which is when I joined the school that I met you at Strood Academy, where I led the humanities department, became an AP just before COVID. So I oversaw the CAG and the TAG process, and you know, quickly developed kind of love for data and outcomes and progress and all of that. Then became a VP at that school, later went on to become a VP at my current school. So I'm kind of, I've been a senior leader for, you know, 4 or 5 years now, maybe a little bit longer. So I have a perspective of senior leadership and a fair understanding across different schools as well.
Thank you so much. So, Chris, how would you define leadership? If you were to create a definition, what would it be?
I think it's so hard to define what leadership is. I think that, you know, you're talking about different types of leaders, autocratic, I'll be honest. I'm not so familiar with the different labels or anything like that. I think a leader is somebody that either people want to follow or people are forced to follow. I think that's, you know, put it quite simply, or a bit of both in an ideal world as well. I think that a leader is somebody who, you know, ideally has a vision, has a drive, has a clear kind of distinct uniqueness and personality, and, you know, somebody that others want to be around. But, you know, I think for me, a leader is somebody who you can succeed and fail with, but ultimately, you know, you're aiming for the same thing. But I think leadership really varies upon the context, you know, upon the situation. Sometimes you need to be a different kind of leader depending on who you're with, who you're leading, the context of the school. It shifts so often. It's so variable that it's just, you know, I think it's almost quite an abstract concept, to be honest. You know, in all honesty, but I think that, you know, leaders and good leaders are really important. And, you know, there's somebody that you spend a lot of that, you know, a lot of time with during your day. A leader can have a huge impact on a person's well-being, a person's mental health. So you've got to take that seriously.
Thank you so much. And I absolutely agree with that. So just to sum up what you've said and some of the key things there, a leader needs to have vision in order to guide the staff and to guide the institution and the organization. They need to have drive, and that drive needs to be transmitted to staff as well. Someone to emulate, someone who will influence and inspire. And I like the fact that you said they need a personality. There needs to be some kind of charisma, because then you will hold your audience. And my university professor posed this question in one of our courses recently, and my immediate response was, what leadership isn't. However, by the end of the session, we had absolute clarity. And it's some of the things you've said here, Chris. Leadership is the ability to influence and motivate others, making sure that team members feel empowered to give their best, made possible through leading by example, recognizing and acknowledging people's efforts, promotions and opportunities for professional development, and making staff feel valued and trusted. I'm sure you'll agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if leaders, and to be honest, let's clarify leaders here, because we often think immediately senior leaders, but every single adult in that school is a leader in their own right. We've got our middle leaders, and we've got our classroom teachers who are also leaders, and they're leading our students. So it's important to understand that. However, I think if senior leaders hire highly skilled people, there will be that element of trust, and so that leaders can lead from the top with humility, you know, to be reflective and reflexive, and to be transformational in the process. So I totally agree, Chris. Leadership is such a dynamic thing; you can't just narrow it down to one thing, and it all depends on your context. So important. And your intended outcomes. So what do you think are the most important qualities of a leader? You've mentioned some of them, but what are some of the other qualities that they should bring to the table?
I think for me, one of the qualities is you need to be optimistic. I think that it's so important that you don't get bogged down and you don't become negative, because ultimately if you're leading a team and you're a negative driving force, it's ultimately going to lead to a negative team. So I think optimism is really important. And I think it's really important for the pupils that we serve as well. If you're not optimistic for the young people that we're teaching, we're helping to educate, then, you know, really you're not a good leader. For me, I think that personally, I think relentlessness, you know, is really important. I think that you have to appreciate the job that we're in. It's not easy, but you have to maintain that relentless focus, that relentless vision in achieving, you know, what we want to for the young people that we're working for. So I think, you know, relentless optimism is really important. I think you've got to be personable, approachable. It's really difficult sometimes when you've had a long day and your email list is building up and you have somebody knocking at your door. It's not the right thing to turn them away. It's not the right thing to, you know, be snappy or anything like that. You know, you have to be somebody who cares about the people that you work with and that you're working for. And you have to be able to, you know, have those conversations. You have to be able to have those niceties as well. You know, leading is about being kind. Not always, sometimes, you know, it depends. There's some people who believe it's better to be feared than loved, or better to be loved than feared, as a leader. And I think sometimes, you know, you need to have a bit of both. I think that accountability is incredibly important. I think that you need to be able to hold those around you to account, but in a proper way and a reasoned way. And, you know, sometimes to be a critical friend is so important, because actually people need to understand the reality of their situation. It wouldn't be fair if somebody wasn't doing the job that was expected of them, or a good enough job, and you not to tell them, because then they haven't got the opportunity to improve. But actually, you know, you can lead with kindness, but still have higher, you know, high levels of accountability. So, you know, these are some of the things that I think are really important to me personally, and some of the traits that I want to instill within my leadership, you know, currently and moving forward.
Yeah, thank you so much. Chris, you mentioned relentlessness. What does that look like? Because teachers listening might think, does that mean senior leaders become overbearing, autocratic, on our backs, not giving us a break, not giving us a chance to have a voice, to share our opinion? What would you say it really means?
I mean, you know, relentlessness is that ability to keep going and to not stop. And, you know, there will be times as leaders where you get knocked. There'll be times as teachers when you get knocked, and our pupils experience it. But you have to be able to dust yourself off, you know, and continue moving forward, because ultimately, you know, we go through, you know, it's the same cycle, isn't it, within schools? You know, you get your pupils, you work with them, and they leave with the best opportunities. Hopefully you're opening doors, and in being relentless means that you just don't stop doing that you continue. I'm not saying, you know, relentlessness doesn't have to be a negative word. That's not, yeah, you know, that's not what, you know, I'm trying to put forward, and yeah, it probably are certain connotations, but that ability to keep driving forward, keep achieving your vision, keep achieving your aims, and leading, you know, hopefully to a successful school, and therefore successful outcomes, a successful culture within the school. Those pupils want to be at the school, they want to be educated, and as a consequence, they are able to move on to their next steps as more rounded people, as kind people, as nice people, but people who can, you know, potentially pursue the careers or further education that they want to.
Yeah. So being relentless in the sense of sticking to your vision and goals, and making sure that despite the setbacks, you push forward because you have that belief in the vision for young people.
I mean, yeah, relentlessness doesn't mean that you don't adapt.
Yeah.
But you don't stop. You know, that's the point. And you
adapt. I like that. Become,
but yeah.
You adapt, you don't give up.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
You mentioned about being feared and loved. Do you think leaders should be feared? Is there any room for that, or any point where leaders should be feared, or should it not be at all, that we should never fear our leaders?
I think that you should. I mean, it's a tricky question again. You know, fear, you know, arouses certain connotations, certain negativity. And you know, that's not my words, but there's people who, you know, leaders, there's been, you know, literature about it in terms of, you know, is it better to be loved or feared or both? And I think it's the idea that actually, you know, it's about being able to hold people to account and people caring that they're being held to account. And, you know, when I talk about, you know, the loved or feared, I don't think that, you know, I don't want to sort of pigeonhole into one or the other, but I think that ultimately, you know, accountability is important. I don't think that a leader who just leads because, you know, people love that person, they want to, you know, lead, follow them, that's not sustainable. There has to be certain accountabilities as well. And you know, you look at some of the great leaders, even, you know, football managers, they're not just, the players aren't playing for them just because they want to, they're playing for them because they fear letting their manager down, they fear not being successful. You know, it's not being scared or petrified of the person they're following. There's lots of different, you know, measures of accountability.
So it's that idea of, yes, the accountability, but also the buy-in into the vision and wanting to make sure that they are a part of it. And I don't know, ultimately, I don't know, I don't like the word fear, but I know it's a quote from somewhere else. But it's having that level of respect and wanting, I prefer the phrase, not letting your students down, not letting your leaders that you trust, your leaders who have integrity that you trust, not letting them down. So that leads us to the next question. To what extent do you think leadership influences staff motivation? Is there a correlation?
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah. And, you know, that's why, you know, fear is not the right thing, but, you know, accountability and, you know, people wanting to follow is so important, because it has a huge impact on staff and staff morale and staff confidence as well. You know, I said, you know, at the start of the show that, you know, we spend a lot of time as colleagues together, and it's about looking after people as well, and making sure that, you know, they feel supported, that they feel, you know, they feel listened to. These are really important things, and, you know, different people's opinions. And, you know, you talk about buy-ins of journey. You know, a vision is just not just one person vision, is it? It's multiple people who have fed into that, and that creates a culture. So leaders are vitally important to everybody, but, you know, I think the culture of a school is equally as important, and that's driven by everybody within that school. You know, the norms, the values, that doesn't just come from one person, that comes from multiple people, and that, you know, that will lead to a successful school, in my opinion.
Thank you. Chris, we're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, I would like us to just take that apart a little bit and look at, what does it really look like, staff motivation, when the leadership is excellent, when the leaders lead ethically and give staff a voice and support them, and they're instructional and transformational. So we want to take that apart a little bit, and I will share some ideas and you let me know what you think. So let us take a little break and listen to our sponsor.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more, and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Welcome back, everybody. Let me just pause to welcome some of our listeners. We've got Natasha, Ms. Kofor online. Thank you so much for joining us, Tasha. We've got Charlie still listening in, and Tom. Thank you so much for staying with us. And all my listeners from places like Romania and Jamaica and Dubai, thank you so much for joining in. So far we've been talking about leadership and how it influences staff, their motivation, how it then influences pupil outcome. And so tonight I have a very special guest, Chris, who's been very open and honest with us so far about leadership, especially at the senior level, and how that influences outcomes, how it influences the school environment, and how it impacts on the day-to-day running of a school. So we were talking about how important leadership is and on staff motivation. So Chris, could you break down for us, please? When staff are motivated, what does that look like? What are the results of that?
I think that you get a really happy working environment, which I think is really, really important. Ultimately, people don't want to come to work and be unhappy. And I think that's, you know, that's so vital. And you know, I speak about culture. I think the kindness and happiness within a school is, you know, absolutely paramount. It's the right way to run a school. I think also motivated people working within a school, motivated people within a school will feel empowered to make decisions, and they may not always be right, but there won't be that fear of recrimination. There will be that excitement in, you know, potentially doing something really innovative. And actually, if it doesn't work out, then, you know, that's a lesson learned. And I think that freedom to try new things and to do new things for the young people that we work with is really exciting. And I think exciting is a really key word as well. I think that I want, you know, people to go to work and be excited about the new things that they can implement or try. Mm-hmm. I just think it leads to support and mutual respect. And I think it just leads to a really happy place. And ultimately, when you go into a school and you feel that happiness, it's like a chicken soup, isn't it? It's just so warming and so nice. And the pupils will get a lot out of that because they will feel part of something. They'll feel part of that school environment. The teachers will feel part of that as well. And it's that collectiveness, that collective responsibility. So I think motivation, you know, a motivated staff looks really positive. I think it looks like lots of fresh ideas. I think that it's a school that is moving forward, a school that is developing, a school where people want to be in that building and, you know, within those lessons. And ultimately, all of those things will lead to lots of different outcomes, you know. And I'm not just talking about GCSEs or A levels, I'm talking about pupils developing, you know, holistically and understanding themselves, understanding their character, and having that freedom to express themselves and express choices and opinions and all of those positive things that you really want to see in a school.
So how does that translate in the classroom? So you've mentioned warm environment, staff feeling empowered to make decisions, even if it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
But how does that translate day to day in the classroom?
I think it first of all translates as staff feeling like they can try different, you know, pedagogical techniques, and, you know, really experiment, but also support one another as well. So if something is going particularly well, you know, with a particular class, it might be that those ideas are shared and, you know, that best practice is, you know, given to other teachers and, you know, viewed by other teachers. It's about people working together. They're not in isolation. I think within the classroom as well, there'll be a sense of the pupils feeling like they have that confidence, because they're really, if you've got a highly motivated staff, you're going to have highly motivated pupils. So that kind of metacognition to go and independently do things and, you know, not fear of making mistakes. And I think that ultimately, it will feel like the pupils want to be there, they want to learn, And that mm-hmm. love of learning is so important, and you can see it in classrooms. You see some classes within schools where the pupils are being almost being dragged through the lesson, and you know, they're just not motivated, they're not involved. And then you see other lessons where the pupils are so in, you know, they so want to be there, they so want to learn, because they've got, you know, that inspirational teacher at the front, or they're in a school where they know they're supported. So I think, you know, it has a huge impact within lessons and on the pupils. And ultimately, you know, we're there to engage the pupils, we're there to teach the pupils, for them to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think it can only be positive within the classroom if the staff are motivated and wanting to support those pupils.
So as a senior leader, Chris, yes. What steps do you take, or should leaders take, to ensure that level of motivation? What needs to be done to ensure that staff are motivated to then impact on the quality of instruction, as you said, pupil engagement, and setting high expectations? What do you do?
I think you need to first of all realise that there is no silver bullet to motivating your staff. I think that it's about listening. I think it's about communicating. I think it's about, you know, it's about realising that you may get things wrong as a leader, and that's fine. And, you know, admitting that you may have got things wrong is also fine. I think it's about, you know, not just, you know, hearing the staff, but also responding to what is best for your staff body and also the pupils. There'll be times when you have to make difficult decisions, and there will be times where that might not land with everybody, but it's about, you know, if you've communicated that clearly and given a clear rationale as to why you're doing something in particular, then you're far more likely to get people on board. People are far more likely to want to follow, to want to, you know, to drive forward, and you know, that will ultimately lead to motivation. And I think it's about also realizing that there is just not one size fits all with people. People are different. People have different motivations. And if you get to know your staff, get to know the individuals within the school that you're working at or the setting that you're working at, what makes different people tick, what motivates different people, and respond to that. You know, you can't, and ultimately your leadership team need to do that as well. They need to have an openness, a willingness to listen, a willingness to support, and also a willingness to allow people those failures, and, you know, not, you know, allow people to fail without that kind of chastising, but actually letting them fail and learning from it and being there as a support if they do.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was very, very thorough. I'm just going to unpick a little bit of that, but let me just pause to welcome some other people who've joined. I saw Mariana earlier, and if you haven't done so yet, please download the Podbean app so you could call in or send us a message. What is your take on leadership? Does leadership impact on staff motivation and ultimately pupil outcomes? What has been your experience as a leader or somebody in a school with different styles of leadership? Please do share with us. Chris, ultimately, I think staff motivation as well depends on the care that's given or the attention that's given to well-being. And people interpret well-being in so many ways. But in an ideal setting, what does staff well-being look like to you in an ideal setting?
I think it looks like looking after each other, and understanding mm-hmm. each other, and adapting to different people's needs and adapting to different people's opinions. You know, well-being is such a broad thing that, you know, there's no one thing that you can put in place that would lead to better staff well-being. There's lots of different things. It's, you know, it's those marginal things that can make a huge difference. And if you have lots of marginal kind of gains in terms of staff well-being, then that should ultimately lead to, you know, people feeling better, people feeling, you know, they want to be at work, like they feel supported, they feel listened to, and they feel motivated. So I think it's just about understanding your staff body and what makes them tick, what makes them feel valued, and what makes them want to be at work, what makes them want to teach at your school and be successful, and helping people. I just think, you know, kindness is so vital within education, with any workplace. You know, to be kind is just so important, and it costs nothing to be kind, and it takes so much more energy to not be kind. So if we're all kind, we're all looking after each other, then, you know, that's, for me, going to lead to strong staff well-being.
Yeah, there needs to be empathy, there needs to be compassion, and sometimes that's a little bit lacking. And I don't know if it's because there are so many people to manage that leaders sometimes lose their focus, and, you know, they're looking at the smaller components and not looking at the system as a whole, and then they lose sight of the things that make their staff tick and the things that demotivate and make them feel rather jaded. So Chris, I'm going to ask this question because I had this discussion with some of my colleagues, and they were saying, you know, leaving cookies and cakes in the staff room at the end of a term or occasionally and awarding people Star of the Week and giving you a mug or something, they're saying for them that that is not well-being, and it creates some kind of animosity sometimes, because teachers are saying we all work hard, and you identify one individual to be Star of the Week or Star of the Term, it's almost as if you're discrediting the work of the other members of staff. You know, what are the criteria to do these things? So I'd just like your opinion on that. Do we need cookies and cakes to motivate staff, or do we need to get to the nitty-gritty and look at professional development? And as you said, knowing your staff and utilizing their skills. What do you think?
I mean, look, if your staff love cookies and cake, then give them cookies and cake. But I think that you're right. You know, for me, that's, you don't want to get into tokenistic things that you're putting into place to say that you're achieving staff well-being. It's much more than that. You know, it's about the culture within a school. It's about not just, you know, providing a prize here or there, but actually, you know, if a staff member feels truly valued, then they feel truly valued because they're being recognized when they do something that's really positive, or they are being supported when they, you know, are struggling. And and actually, those things are far more important. And you know, being listened to, being heard, that's so important. I'm not going to take away, you know, I think sometimes it's lovely, you know, if there's cookies and cakes left in the staff room. I don't necessarily think that, you know, a star of the week is, you know, what I would necessarily do. But I think sometimes it's nice to publicly thank people. That's always, you know, that's always a kind thing to do, but, you know, you don't have to do just single one person out. It's, there's lots of cogs that are turning in a school, isn't there? And you don't want people to feel left out or like they're not doing a good job. So it's about making sure that if you do that, that, you know, people have their moment as well. It's not just the same people that are being recognized. And it, you know, it needs to be for a valid reason as well, not just something that, again, you know, is some tokenistic reason. So I think that for me, things like that could potentially have a place, but they're not even slightly the most important thing in terms of staff well-being. There's so many more things than just
absolutely love that, Chris. I love the fact that you said there are so many cogs that's turning this wheel and so many components that create the whole. And it's important that, I like what you said, that you thank people rather than singling out somebody for being the star. When you're sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, I've done this, this, and this this week. Where is my recognition? And after all, we're human beings. And we're motivated when we're recognized. We're motivated when we're thanked and when people acknowledge what we're doing. So it's so important. And for leaders, yes, it's challenging sometimes to create that balance. But of course, we're not saying we don't love cookies and cakes. We do, because especially if it's a long teaching day, who doesn't want a cup of coffee or tea with a slice of cake or a cookie? We appreciate that. But some people tend to think, well, we've done this for you and we've left a care package in the toilet and we've done this. But it takes a little bit more than that. And you've said repeatedly, Chris, it's about listening. It's about caring. And I'm going to raise a point or mention a point that you raised about coming to your senior or going to your senior leader when you're struggling? And do you think sometimes staff are reluctant to do that because they feel as though it will be regarded as a weakness? And how can leaders prevent that from happening?
I think that human nature, not just, you know, teachers, but it's human nature that you worry about going to somebody, you know, that you're potentially struggling or something's not gone well because you don't want to be judged. And it's important that as a leader that you make sure that that judgment, that, you know, that response is not a negative one, that it's a supportive one, that you're not there to make them, you know, a person feel worse about themselves. You're there to pick them up and help them, and also support with them with understanding what might have gone wrong or understanding why they might be struggling, and helping them. Yeah, that's so vital. It's that help. And so I think that if you have a leadership team or a leader who people recognize as, you know, a group of people or a person that is willing to help, is willing to give them time, and willing to support them, then they are far more likely to feel safe in actually going to that leader. But, you know, the opposite, if they feel that there's going to be recriminations or they're going to be told off, then why would they? And it, you know, this is just human nature. So it's about making sure that you're approachable. And I don't just mean, you know, that whole kind of open door policy, literally. It's mm-hmm. that idea that, you know, people can come and discuss their needs, discuss what they might be struggling with, and be supported to improve.
And without the fear of being judged.
I think, exactly. But you know what, like, sometimes there will be a judgment made. It doesn't have to be that, because we all judge a situation, don't we? But that judgment doesn't have to be a negative one. It can be a supportive judgment. You know, this has gone wrong. Let's reflect upon that. How do we improve it? And, you know, what I'm saying is, it, you know, a judgment which is always going to be negative or make somebody feel bad about themselves is not going to help them. But a judgment where you're judging the situation together, you're reflecting on it together and improving, that's mm-hmm. so much more positive.
So, Chris, how should that be communicated to staff? Because I've seen where, and I've taught in a lot of contexts, so, you know, this is not limited to any specific setting, but how should that be communicated to staff? Because I've seen where staff would rather struggle with behavior than alert anyone to it because they don't want to be regarded, oh, he or she is a weak teacher. So as leaders, how can we communicate this openness to staff that, listen, we're here to support and to make it genuine? How do we do that?
Through actions. You don't just communicate it by saying you're going to do it. You communicate by doing it. And actually, you know, if you see something within a lesson as a leader that, you know, or poor behavior, and you speak to that teacher afterwards and you reflect with them and give them advice, give them support, and allow them to feel that they are safe, mm-hmm. to, you know, perhaps, you know, on-call a pupil without being judged, then that's going to make them feel much better. Whereas if you just say, look, we're here to support, we've got an open door policy, come and tell us, but you don't live it, then that's mm-hmm. not good communication. It's about, you know, it's about showing it and being there. And also, you know, leading from the front, you know, supporting other leaders and allowing people to see that, you know, you're supporting. And, you know, none of us are kind of, you know, infallible. We're all humans after all. And I think it's, you know, it's about showing that we're there to support, we're there to care, and not just saying it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. So we're going to go for a short break, but because I know you're going shortly, Chris, I'm just going to continue. And then once you've finished your section, then we will go for a break. So I've been studying leadership at the moment and innovation in my course. And we've got Herzberg, and he came up with the two-factor theory. And he's one of those theorists that lots of organizations follow. And he explained the two-factor theory as having two key things, and that is the hygiene factor and the motivation factor. And the hygiene factor, he says, is about job security, good salaries and a positive working environment. And you've talked about the positive working environment. And alongside that, recognition, which will then come with motivation. How important are these factors to you as a leader? And how much of that is within your control? So job security, good salaries, and a positive working environment.
I mean, a positive working environment, certainly. In terms of job security, I think that if you have a positive working environment and people feel like they're successful, people are being successful because you've allowed them to be successful, you've helped them to be successful, then they will feel secure within their job. And you know, creating that culture of success and support and not fear of failure. I mean, in terms of salaries, that's something that I think most leaders will tell you is something that is tricky, is in a number of ways beyond my control, because of things like budgets and the restraints that
Okay, I think we have a little bit of a disruption there, and Chris was just talking to us about salary and how much control leaders have over that because of budgeting and so on.
I think
others argue. Oh, sorry, Chris, how we lost you for a little bit. No. That was just summing up what you've said. You were talking about salaries and how much control you have over that as a school leader.
Yes, yeah. I was just saying that, it's not always easy to, particularly at sort of my level, to have that sway in terms of salaries. There are certainly sort of budget and financial constraints that we have to work within. And that's the reality of the situation. But you try where you can to ensure that everybody is absolutely recognised, through the salary that they're earning.
Yeah. Thank you. So I know you're about to go, Chris, but I have to get the last two questions in.
Okay.
So, we talk about instructional leadership. And there's a new school of thought that with instructional leadership, it's important for leaders to provide the resources from the top and not to be so hands-on with the day-to-day, like learning walks and lesson observations. That doesn't necessarily motivate staff. It sometimes demotivates staff when it becomes way too much. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, on the frequency of learning walks and lesson observations. Does it motivate or demotivate staff? What do you think?
I think it depends on the member of staff. I think, when I was a teacher, I never minded people coming into my room for learning walks because there were leaders around me who, when they came in for a learning walk, they wouldn't do it as a method of trying to catch members of staff out. They would do it as a method of support. They would do it as a method of improvement for that member of staff. And I felt that, I was given new ideas, new tips, and particularly if you're struggling with the class, that's really helpful. I think that it's what is the intent in those learning walks? Is your intention to catch people out, or is your intention to support? And staff will know, fairly quickly what the intent behind them is. And I think that it's about making sure that you have a good positive intention. And I think that if you have an open and honest working environment, learning environment, then people won't mind it so much. But if you're there to just find people out and chastise them as a result, then that's not pleasant. So I really, I think the intent behind the learning walks and also making sure that staff understand why they're taking place is really important. And, I think the number of learning walks, sometimes it depends on the current position of the school, the context. I don't think there's a one size fits all. You should have X amount of learning walks a week, for example. I think it's really dependent on the staff body that you have and the school that you're in. So, it's very hard to answer that question. But what I would say is that, if you're intending to help people, intending to improve and doing it in a kind and honest way, then those learning walks will be far more positive and impactful than otherwise.
Okay, thank you. And before you go, one last thing we'd like you to leave us with, Chris, is what top tips would you give to an experienced leader or a novice school leader?
I think top tips to an experienced or a novice leader is just to look after yourself and to take care of yourself, and you know, remember that it's really hard sometimes, and if during those times it's really hard, you know, if you need to ask for help, ask for help. Don't be afraid to. And if you need extra support, ask for that extra support. You know, there'll be times as the most experienced leader or the least experienced leader where you just need a bit of guidance, or you just need to chat to somebody. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to do that. You know, it's a tough job. It's a real tough gig at times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, use those people around you and make sure that you're there to support them as well. And just, you know, you're in it together, and feeling like you're in it together really does make a difference.
Thank you so much, Chris, and all the best as you continue to lead and develop others. Thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us and for being so honest and open and, you know, for accepting and consenting to be with me on Teachers Talk Radio. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. You take care.
You too. We're going to go for a short break. Do remember to download the Podbean app so you can send me a message, you know, share your thoughts. What do you think about leadership and the impact of leadership on staff motivation and, of course, pupil outcomes? You're in the classroom. How do you perceive it? We just heard from Chris's perspective. But as a middle leader or a classroom teacher, what are your perceptions? So do join in and let me know what you think. And we'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
So there you have it. And if you love books like myself, especially anything to do with education, do check them out and see what they have to offer, and use the code as well so you can get your discount. So welcome back, everybody. Chris has left us and he shared with us a lot tonight and some very interesting points and perspectives from a senior leadership point of view. And I'm just going to continue the discussion. Thank you for staying with me, everybody. And I'd love to hear your thoughts as well about leadership and the impact it's had on you and your style of leadership. Now, as a middle leader, I think at the heart of my approach to leadership is the servant style leadership. And if anybody who's been in a department where I've been head of department, you can tell me what you think. But so I would want to think that I'm compassionate and empathetic, always available, ready to listen to others and support them wholeheartedly. However, if this is not managed and balanced with other styles of leadership, such as distributed or shared leadership styles, one can burn out easily. And if your manager or leader is burnt out, then unfortunately, everything is just going to go downhill if you're not careful. So whilst being a servant style leader, it's important to delegate responsibilities. And in so doing, develop and empower staff, help them to be effective And therefore, as leaders, it's important that we invest in ourselves. So what has been my observations of leadership over the years? It's been very varied. And as I said earlier, I've taught in several contexts. So this is not limited to one particular school or one particular organization. But one of the first things I want to point out is the inexperienced head, who is inherently a decent human being, but overcompensates. Why? Because they don't want staff to think that they're pushovers. And so that results in them becoming autocratic leaders, making all the decisions, and often the wrong ones. I remember we used to have staff meetings, and I don't know if anybody else still has staff meetings, but in the last 10 years or so, I can't recall a staff meeting. We have staff briefing, 15 minutes once per week, if you're lucky, twice per week. And sometimes, you know, the staff meetings would have gone on and on. But what they did for us, they gave us the opportunity to ask probing questions and to have a say in school matters. And as I said before, increasingly, that is changing. And we're seeing situations where staff are given orders, we are given instructions, but we're not allowed to engage in these discussions. Sometimes you're told blatantly that questions are not allowed. And so my question is, how will an institution grow? How will your staff develop if we're not allowed to ask those critical questions, those crucial questions, to get our leaders to think or rethink their practice? But I've been told a number of times, those of you who are online and you know me, I love to ask questions. And if I'm not sure about something, I'd rather ask than go away and make mistakes. And from time to time, I'm told, not now, Michelle. Okay. But so when do we ask those questions? And it's not just the inexperienced heads, I must point out, but that's just based on my observation. Then you have the leaders who openly favor other members of staff and isolate others, whether consciously or subconsciously. And that goes back to this reward system for teachers, Star of the Week, you get a mug, you get a certificate, and all of that. How valuable is that really? And so those leaders who do not know their team and do not take the time out to know the strengths of others and build on them accordingly, they isolate staff. Chris mentioned about taking the time out, knowing what makes your staff tick. But how many leaders go out of their way to do that? You know, I remember one head teacher, when she met me, she said, oh my goodness, your CV is so impressive. But where do you go from there? Do you build such a colleague, or do you keep them in their lane? Do you keep them in that mold and you don't get them to build on those skills and to develop those skills? What do you do with it? Then we have the leaders who fail to develop themselves. And what they do is they recycle the same systems and practices without measuring the impact on student outcomes and staff motivation, but instead cast the blame on departments rather than exploring the root cause. The same dull CPDs, the outdated ones that have just come back in the system with a different name and no longer fit for purpose. Now, Chris pointed out, leadership is a hard gig, and I know that, a very hard gig. Whether you're a middle leader or a senior leader, it's a hard gig. But it is so important that we reflect, and not only reflect, but we become reflexive. So we think about the what. What's not working in my organization? How am I going to change this for the betterment of my team, for the improvement of my team, my students, and all stakeholders? How am I going to fix this? But how many times do leaders actually do that? Take some ownership. You know, Chris talked about accountability, but leaders, we also need to be made accountable for the decisions we make and the actions that we take. What about those leaders who micromanage rather than being instructional? Rather than adopting a systems thinking approach where they look at the school as a whole, its role in society or the community it serves, and then looking at the component parts that make up the whole, recognizing the areas for improvement and investing in highly skilled staff and effective resources. You know, Chris said learning walks, they have their place. Yes, they do. Observations, We need those. But what are we really looking for? When you pop into somebody's classroom for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, how do you then form a judgment of that teacher's pedagogical style and didactic skills? So it's a lot to really take in, and it's important that as leaders, we reflect, we develop ourselves, we develop those around us, we lead with empathy, we are resilient and decisive. And one thing I think is very, very important, strategic thinking. And often we throw this word around, you need to be proactive. But my professor, who might be online, he challenges us all the time and he asks the questions, for example, what does it mean to be proactive? And we often think being proactive is coming up with solutions for a problem that already exists. But actually, being proactive means preempting a future problem and coming up with solutions before we encounter those problems. That is being proactive. And that's what leaders need to start doing. And that's the way in which leaders should start thinking. Chris talked about adaptability. That is also very important. Hi, Emily. Welcome. A fellow host has joined us. Welcome, Emily, from Dubai here. Good to have you online. And we're talking about the impact of leadership on staff motivation and ultimately pupil outcome. So if staff aren't motivated, we're going to see that manifested in the classroom. They will not take care in their delivery, in their planning, in their execution of lessons, and the students will feed off that as well. So it is so important that leaders look after yourselves, but also your staff. Don't just inspire, but influence. True leaders influence change. And if you're leading and there's absolutely no change in the mindset of your staff and the mindset of your students, you probably need to go back to the drawing board and rethink your strategies. So leaders is not about following the leader. No, it's not about following the leader. It's about the leader influencing staff to wanting to be better, a better version of themselves. And that is so important. So I'm going to stop here for a minute so we can listen to the news. And when we come back, I just want to share with you a little bit more about my own experiences as a leader and my experiences of someone who's being led, so to speak. Do stay tuned. Remember to download the Podbean app, call in or send me a message. What are your thoughts on the leadership styles that you have observed? Stay tuned.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
Multiple media outlets have covered comments made by UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak about pro-Palestinian demonstrations which are taking place on university campuses nationwide. Mr. Sunak called on university leaders to ensure the safety of all students and highlighted the importance of universities as places where respectful debate flourishes, but called them bastions of tolerance. He went on to criticise a vocal minority who were disrupting the lives and studies of their fellow students. He also said that there were some cases of outright harassment that has to stop. The meeting with the university leaders aimed to address the response of higher education institutions to the surge in pro-Palestinian protests, as encampments have appeared on more than a dozen campuses. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan has said that university vice-chancellors need to show leadership over concerns that campuses could become unsafe environments if they go down the route that you see in other places like the US. In recent weeks, TV footage has shown police in the United States break up demonstrations and encampments at universities and colleges across that country. Many images show officers in riot gear and in large numbers. In Scotland, new First Minister John Swinney has been accused of using the same old excuses as he refused to answer a question about whether he would live up to a promise made by the SNP to add an extra 3,500 teachers to the workforce. The Scottish Daily Express reports that Mr. Swinney was accused of having a record in education of broken promises. The comments were made by Scottish Tory leader Douglas Ross. And Mr. Ross went on to highlight cuts to teacher jobs by cash-strapped councils, failing to provide a laptop to every child, and abandoning a bill intended to raise standards. Mr. Swinney served as Education Minister from 2016 to 2021. In England, Education Secretary Gillian Keegan has also been on record about the impact parents working from home has had on school attendance. Speaking to The Times, Ms. Keegan said that 50,000 more school pupils took absences on Fridays compared to the start of the week, and cited working from home parents who whisk their children out of school on Friday to take them off for long weekend breaks. Ms. Keegan said curbing the rise in absences was a top priority and that data has helped target support for parents and schools. Fines which can be issued to parents have increased from a minimum of £20 to a minimum of £80. The BBC reports that students hoping to start undergraduate courses in 2025 will be able to see the grades that recent successful applicants have achieved at A-level or the equivalent. Universities already publish entry requirements for courses, but they can be flexible and let students in with lower grades. UCAS is making the changes to help students make informed, ambitious choices and to give them confidence in their applications. Applications for undergrad courses for 2025 open on the 14th of May. The new tool should allow students to search a course and see the most recent common grades held by those accepted onto it in previous years. It will also show how many students were offered a place compared with those who applied. Students who get free school meals will also no longer have to pay the £28.50 application fee. Finally, international students in Wales are reported by the BBC as sleeping rough on some university campuses after struggling to find housing close to lectures. A long commute from affordable accommodation has seen some students sleep in 24-hour study spaces to help reduce costs. Universities Wales says it always encourages students facing difficulty to talk to their institution. Nida Ambreen of Bangor University Students Union said postgrad international students were particularly affected as they often come with families and were not eligible for university housing. According to latest figures, there are 20,920 non-EU international students currently studying in Wales, and the Welsh universities are aiming to increase that number as they can be charged higher fees. Members of the Welsh Senate have raised the issues repeatedly over the last year. But full details of this story can be found on the BBC News Wales website. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
Thank you so much, Jo. I always look forward to hearing the news from Jo because it keeps me abreast of what's happening in the UK and in the world of education there as well. So lots to take in there. So thank you so much, Jo. And thanks for staying with me, everybody. Thank you for joining tonight as well. We're in the last stretch of our show, and I'm just going to talk a little bit more about leadership and my own experiences. Now, my parents who are listening will agree that leadership was thrust upon me from a very early age, and through the church and when I started secondary school. And right through my secondary school years, year 7 all the way to year 11, I was always the form captain, always. So the girls would nominate me as a form captain, and then they would complain that I was too judgmental and that I was too harsh. But clearly I've matured and I've clearly changed my leadership style. I remember once the teacher didn't turn up for the lesson, and I decided to take over and teach. It was an English lesson. I decided to take over and just teach the lesson. You can tell that I was destined to be a teacher. This was year 7. And a student got up, walked towards me, and I looked up from my book, and she went back to her seat. And I said, what do you want? You know, why? How can I help? And she said, oh, never mind, Michelle, the way you looked at me, that's enough. I know the answer is no. So that was me trying to form my own little style of leadership. And then in my early 20s, mid-20s, I was appointed head of English. Was I out of my depth? Oh, yeah. But I took on the role with such confidence that I think I was probably convincing. But I knew there were cracks because I was still learning the craft. And that is it with leadership. For me, we have to lead with humility. And that is something I learned really early on. I was leading women at the time, some of them twice my age. Some of them who've been teaching for 20 years, 10 years. This was my fifth year in teaching. And I had to learn to be humble. And sometimes that's what leadership lacks, because sometimes as leaders, we think we have all the answers, but we don't. And it's okay to turn to other experts in your organization to get some of those answers. And that's okay. And that is you leading with integrity, developing trust from your colleagues. And that is so important. Another thing I think leaders ought to be, they ought to be innovative. And, you know, it's not just buying hundreds of dictionaries for everybody or making sure that we all have a whiteboard. It goes beyond that. It's coming up and designing those systems that will benefit the entire team and making sure that it's embedded in practice. And that's another thing as an educator. You know, we come up with these lofty ideas. We throw them out, but we do not give it time to be embedded in practice. And then we introduce something else. So I think, you know, we need to step back sometimes, watch things take root, measure the impact before we thrust upon teachers, oh, here comes another idea because so-and-so said it or this school is using it. But as Chris said earlier, it's all about the context. So we have to be mindful of those things. And I think in order to be innovative, leaders need to act as outsiders who are generalists. You know, they're on the periphery sometimes, looking in, looking at the school as a whole system, a whole component, you know, looking at it and thinking, right, here are the component parts. This one is not working so well. What can we do to fix that? But with the outsider lens, you're better off in coming up with those solutions. But if you're in the midst of it, you sometimes become blindsided. And you cannot really come up with those solutions. So as leaders, you know, Chris said learning walks, and I mentioned, yeah, they have their place, but sometimes you need to spend some time away in the office, strategizing, thinking about your school, thinking about your students and their outcomes. And then you will probably more than likely arrive at a workable solution. So please do send me your thoughts. Type your thoughts. Let me know how you feel about leadership, school leadership in particular, your own experiences, or yourself as a leader. How do you see yourself? I said earlier, I'm, you know, like a servant style leader. I like to make sure that my team are happy, that they feel free to come to me and talk to me about anything, that they feel free to share ideas and not having a backlash or any kind of animosity. Or, you know, the feeling of jealousy. I should have thought of that. No, I welcome staff to come and share ideas and very open with that. And that leads me to the next point. It's important that we model leadership. not just for the people around us, but as staff, but our students. Because our students look at us, how we interact with each other, how the leaders of the school interact with the rest of the staff, and they mimic those behaviors. And you know, those interactions also impact on how they interact with you as the classroom teacher. It is so important. You know, on occasions, I've had to speak to people and to colleagues about their tone that sometimes is rather condescending. And if that's the case, I will let you know, because sometimes we don't know. So it's important that as leaders, we welcome the criticisms. We welcome the constructive criticisms. And if people are harsh as well, as a leader, you have to welcome that and understand how to manage it. Very important, without getting the hump, storming off, ostracizing the poor teacher. You know, it's important that we are role models for our leaders, for our staff, and for our students. Very, very important. So we talked about staff motivation, and Chris and I went through a few things. We talked about staff well-being and what that looks like. So for me, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about that. So when teachers are demotivated or burnt out, it can negatively impact their ability to effectively teach and support their students. Addressing factors that contribute to teacher motivation and well-being, such as workload, very, very important. Professional development opportunities and supportive leadership. These things are very crucial for maintaining a positive learning environment and promoting pupil outcomes. And workload is a constant discussion. especially if you teach humanities or English, oh wow, all the marking. And it's again, it's about school leaders being strategic in how they plan around assessments to make sure that we have ample time to mark, that we have ample time to give feedback, and that the feedback is of excellent and high quality. That is so important. You know, when it comes to workload, how many exam groups have you allocated a single member of staff? How many exam boards are they teaching? How many specifications are they teaching? It's these things. How often do we have meetings? How often do we have duties? You know, these are the things that really impact on our workload. And all the teachers online, I'm sure you'll agree that our work does not stop at 3:15 or 4:15. It carries on through the evening, sometimes 11 o'clock at night, sometimes through the weekends, you know, and members of the public, hey, Charlie, members of the public will say things like, why do teachers complain? They've got the long holidays. But how much of that really is our holiday? You know, how much of our allocated planning time, we people call it different things, PP or PPA, how much of that time do we really get to plan? Or are we asked to cover lessons? So these are the little things that leaders do need to consider to make sure that staff remain motivated. And so here are my final thoughts. It is safe to say effective leadership impacts on staff motivation and subsequently pupil outcomes. If teachers are motivated, it will be reflected in the classroom. They will inspire students. Their passion for their subject will come through. So leaders at whatever level, we need to keep hitting the refresh button. Know your team and their needs. Lead with integrity and empathy. Be strategic. Give staff a voice. Empower, inspire, motivate, and celebrate your staff collectively and individually. Not necessarily singling out individuals as stars of the week. As far as I'm concerned, every star matters and makes up the sum of the whole. Hire highly skilled staff so that you can trust their expertise and ensure there's ongoing development. If staff are demotivated, you will never obtain the progress aid and the attainment aid you're hoping to achieve. So to those leaders who check all or most of the boxes in true Jamaican style, big up yourselves. To all leaders, take care of yourselves, because your most valuable staff, your most valuable resource are your staff as well. So take care of yourself, and your staff. Thank you, everybody, for joining me once again on our Wednesday Twilight Show. Thanks for your participation, suggestions, and contributions. I think Emily's saying she agrees. Most definitely, Emily. Leadership, it's a massive role. It's a big role, and we need to take it seriously, and we need to think about the people we impact daily. So thank you, everybody, for joining me once again on the Wednesday Twilight Show. Thanks for your participation. Thanks for just being there and keeping me company. Hope to see you again in 2 weeks' time for another deep and meaningful discussion. Enjoy the rest of the evening, or good night if it's already your bedtime. Just remember, leadership matters. Do it to the best of your ability and influence those around you. Good night.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.